and some human art.
I wanted to ask you, because we're...
How about Miss Sontag Wu to be?
No, we won't agree.
Better keep off the ideas. My only ally about that is Alfred.
Oh, yeah.
I think she's very nice.
Yeah.
But can't get anything from her.
No, I saw Rainey and Alfred last night and they...
You did.
And I recounted your...
Yes,
astonishment that I had admitted any influence from the woman at all.
Well,
and I said,
Rainey was sympathetic to you once.
Yes, she's always sympathetic. I said we played a sort of ghastly parlor game about this, in which I was asked to name two propositions that I had taken from her, and I said
no,
her influence
wrong.
Was not of a propositional kind.
No, I agree.
And then attempted with what I thought was a cunning rhetorical ploy to turn it against you and say I could not name propositions that I've taken from.
Well, you could.
I could. No,
in fact, you
true.
Could.
That's true.
Oh, my books, certainly.
But a style.
The thing about her is that I didn't demand propositions any more than I demand from Kafka. Remember, you see?
Yes.
But, you know, I just can't get... Something that lingers in my mind. That's quite different. No, not propositions. I'm not thinking about her doctrines. But what is she... Why is she made of... Think of a different. I just wanted some impression of sketch. I had put up my settle for that.
You would not have settled for it.
I would. If you could have told me.
I wanted to ask you what I've been meaning to do for several weeks is to ask you about 46, 47, 48 in your life, that period of your life. And I was actually quite interested to know we've not talked about at all, really, about Zionism, the gradual emergence of the State of Israel, horror of Bevin's policy towards Palestine, all that kind of stuff. I'm just wondering how you remember that.
Well, look, I was really, why were there Zionists in the beginning? My parents. My father was only Jewish in the class, a Russian Jewish merchant, who was not particularly anti-Zionist, but wasn't a Zionist. I mean, he didn't think it awful, like Aline's father, who thought more or less the same as fascism. It was so dreadful. Nationalism was frightful. It was a religion, nothing else. He was a Russian, of the Jewish faith.
Yeah.
Jews weren't a people at all.
Yes.
But, there are people like this, even now. Who was it? Again, telling me about my new friend, suddenly realized. My mother was a very Jewish Jewess, brought up under more ghetto-like conditions in Riga, but so, not a ghetto, but mostly Yiddish-speaking parents. My father, too. My father was Evolue, which Lebanese might be, speaking French rather than Arabic. My mother was very deeply, very truthful. Strong character, full of vitality and life, disappointed in life because I didn't really want to marry my father at all, was her first cousin. And did so in order to get out of her horrible father's house. Wanted to be a singer, had an extremely good voice, completely wasted, but which is why I brought up in a kind of atmosphere of Verdi and Bizet. And sort of German, Riga German opera, and Italian German opera, circa 1900. Kind of music.
That's the good stuff.
Not Beethoven.
Yeah.
First time I heard Bach, is absolutely built over. I had no idea what sort of music in the world. Now, my mother was a Jewish nationalist by temperament. There wasn't anything to fix it onto, maybe Zion, but she wasn't attached to it. But when the Balfour Declaration was published in 1917, when I was 8, she was in a very cock-a-hoop state. Her family was not, neither her sister's nor my father's family, but she suddenly thought something had happened, something wonderful to the Jews had occurred. When we came to England, I was joined a young Zionist society, quite natural. Because from her, I derived the some realism about the Jews. That it's absurd to call them a religion, really. They were, in the full sense of the word, something on their own. They were a people, whatever that might mean. They weren't a state, they weren't a nation, but they were a community bound by common past, common sentiments, common persecution, common religion, certainly, common language of kind, sacred language, common something which made of them an anomaly in the world, which you see a sort of mysterious community in their soil, and could possibly see, but somehow or other they were just Jews and not something else. And they were Jews in the first place, not the second place. You couldn't say Englishmen, of course, Jews too. A few perhaps, but broadly speaking, when I met Jews, the obvious thing about them was they were Jews, and therefore I remember a wonderful thing which a man called Joseph, can't remember the name, a Canadian Jewish lawyer, he was governor of Jerusalem when they had to besiege it. And, what was his first name? Dolph was the Hebrew name, but he was a Canadian, right? And some Canadian Jews came to see him, the Zionists. And he said, you must do this and that. And he said, if we do this, don't think we can. Because if we do this, Canadians won't like it. Mm-hmm. Which he said, I thought you were Canadians. It was called Shrewd Hit.
Yes, Shrewd Hit. Right on the target.
No. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. That's my point. I was never deceived about that.
Yes.
And I've never been an Englishman. Yes. Or a Russian. Mm-hmm. Russian Jew is what I am. Was. Perfectly different classification, which is, I've never thought of anything else. He've described it as for certain purposes, and that's why I didn't protest. As far as I see, if I was asked what I was, I would never say, I'm English.
Yes.
British, yes, maybe.
Yes.
Like the old joke about Czechoslovakia. If you ask a man in Czechoslovakia what he is, he's a Czech. Alternatively, you can say, he's a Slovak, or even a Ruthenian. You ask a Jew, he says, I'm a Czechoslovak. There's a certain hideous truth in that particular joke.
Absolutely.
You see? Hence, I'm well aware. So I was brought up. I just believed in Zionism as such, for the reason I've given you.
Mm-hmm.
Not for religious or historical. And of course, I mean, Jews are fixated on Zion, that's inevitable. Mm-hmm. This is what makes intimate experience for Jews is bound to Bible, the Hebrew and all this stuff. And that's why I didn't avoid myself, but because there's no good being a minority everywhere. Because that distorted people's natures. That's why I came, like Herzl so much, who said all this about the Germans. There's always been blamed for it, wrongly. Anyhow, then I joined the Young Zionist Society, and I learned Hebrew, and I regarded it as never quite natural. And then 1920, I didn't follow events in Palestine all that much, perhaps, but at that time, in 1929, I was in Dresden in the summer when there was a tremendous massacre of the Jews, for tremendous for that time, in Palestine by Arabs. In Hebron and Safed, where a lot of religious Jews, I mean, were slaughtered. I propose nothing very much. Something to do with the Wailing Wall, I think. Anyhow, something inside the Arab religion. And that I remember minding very much. And maybe all Jews, but I did particularly. Then there was a white paper in the Sidney Webb was the colonial secretary, Labour government, and he decided to limit immigration. And there was great outcry about that, which I understood, sympathized with, etc. I didn't read any Zionist literature, and I met none. I had an uncle, one of them, other than my aunt was, but I didn't have much faith. Well then, when I came up to Oxford, were the fully fledged Zionists. There was a thing called the Adler Society and the Zionist Society. The Adler Society for the what they were called Anglo-English, what the Jews were called. Zionists, they were Zionists. Right here, or maybe more often, I used to address them by request, because I was the only Don in Oxford who was there to have tenure, literally alone, in 1932-33. I used to talk to them, addressing the Zionist sermons to them, roughly speaking. And I remained one, quite unnaturally and quite unselfconscious. Because, I mean, it seemed to me a perfectly normal thing to believe. I just happened to believe that some people believe in something else. I mean, anarchism or something. And then came 1936 Peel Commission. And then they hadn't advised me then. I didn't follow that very closely. I thought,
what was your circumstances of your meeting with Weizmann?
Perfectly accidental. I was made a member of a thing called the Friends of the Hebrew University by a very, very idealistic man called Norman Bentwich, who was a sweet, not very clever liberal, who was Attorney General of Palestine and during the mandate, and then, because no Arab could be given equal status because they weren't good enough, had to go. And the Arab shot him, and of course, in the groin or thigh, and he wanted him to be reprieved. He's one of these pure peace now characters. And touching rather, but silly. And he made me a member of this body, and I was well known Don by then, and so quite well known academically. And he asked me to propose a vote of thanks to Mrs. Seif, wife of Israel Seif, in whose most luxurious flat in Park Lane. There was a meeting of the Friends, Hebrew University, addressed by Herbert Samuel, by the High Commissioner of Palestine, was called Field Marshal Walker. Maybe he was only a general. Sir somebody Walker. He was rather friendly to Jews. Northern Ireland, of course, and Weizmann. And I'd never met any of these persons before. I shook hands with Samuel, which led to nothing at all, and then was presented to Weizmann by Bentwich. And Weizmann must have heard about my existence, because he then, I remember when I proposed the word of thanks, what I long to say is, the first thing we think about when we think of Rebecca Seif, she's very, very, very rich. I kept looking through my head.
I thought, kind of insane thing that you couldn't get out.
I thought, oh my God, will I save? Will I lose? Will I lose all control? Will I save?
Right.
I didn't say it. I always went off with a little platitude. Right. And then he said to me, you speak Russian, my wife would like to talk to you, she likes to talk Russian, would you come to tea? That was
1938,
not before, maybe even 39, I'm not thinking what it would have been. I think it was something like earlier 39 even, later that.
Right.
Then I went to tea. He was a great flirt, Python. He wanted to capture people, proceeded to do so. In a very velvety, extremely seductive voice, began telling the story of my life. David, of course, I looked at him with awe and in a worshipful manner. Anyway, because of course I am a hero worshiper, as I told you, by nature anyway. He was a head of the movement, highly intelligent, very amusing, and a statesman. He was that. He was a great man. Always a powerful kind. And what he said was enormous, extremely interesting. Cozy was not. He was with me later. Quite jolly. Not solemn. Cynical.
Yes. Shrewd.
And cynical. about politics and so on, but, and funny, and not so kind. Mm. He didn't meet people, threw them in the gutter. So I was like, Vince.
Really? Yeah.
Well, and then I went to see him once, I went to see him second time, and then, maybe a third time. Anyhow, he recruited me in some way, although well, I wasn't given anything to do. Mm-hmm. And then the war started. I used to go and see him in the Dorchester Hotel, where by that time he lived. And I remember when I came back from America in, I suppose, early September, I went to the Dorchester to meet the air raid. I longed to go to the air raid shelter. Mm-hmm. Paid no attention to all this terrible noise going on. None.
You just sat there.
What?
You just sat there in the hotel room.
I went on talking. I was too ashamed to confess my fears. The anti-aircraft guns in Hyde Park probably made more noise than the bombs. But,
Can you remember? Can you remember at any stage?
You were charmed by him.
You were charmed by him, but can you remember at any stage a kind of concerted discussion by him about what would happen to European Jewry?
No. No, all I can tell you is that he never talked about it. In 1938, when the last Zionist Congress occurred, mm-hmm. maybe even 39, in Baal or somewhere, a lot of people came from Eastern Europe. Yeah. They said goodbye to each other very tearfully, because they thought some of them might never see each other again. That some premonition might go very badly. The Germans were 39. Mm-hmm. As you go back, Germany, Poland, Romania, where we came from. The partings are very apparent here. I never went to the Zionist Congress in my life. The partings are very touching. But why me charmed me, and I thought he was a great man, and I thought he was definitely right for the Jews. Sober, practical, and balanced, and very pro-British. He thought they were the
And not an intellectual, very much a man of action,
not
strategies, plans.
Sometimes people think he was, and his wife, extremely angry with him, would say, saying an article from the encyclopedia, which I must have written, saying he was not at all an intellectual.
Yes.
He wasn't.
Yes.
Paul Ben-Gurion was a peasant type.
Yes.
Because he imagined the wife was an intellectual, began to take an interest in Indian love poetry, Plato, what he also wanted.
Yes.
Come up with, found an illusion.
Yes.
Weitzel was a practical inventor.
Yes.
I mean, he may have read Nietzsche in his childhood, youth. Never talk about books. Yes. Or what's inside books.
Yes.
Never.
Fine.
Never.
Interesting.
No more than Winston. I mean, don't know, he may have read, not very well, even absolutely, totally practical man. Mm. An extremely good judge of character.
When
knew what he was doing.
When did you renew contact with him after the war?
He had no sleepless nights, I don't believe.
Really?
Well, he may have done, like Roosevelt. He entirely took an interest in people so far as they could help the movement.
Yes.
Like pretty women. That's not too serious. Mm. Bundles of letters began to appear after he died. For the archives really wanted to sell.
Yes.
Then, when the in 1939, in Oxford, when the White Paper was published, early 1939, which stopped Zionism, in effect. What it said was that immigration was to continue for another 5 years,
yeah.
Limited scale, but not after that, unless the Arabs agreed. It was clear it was not going to happen. Which, in effect, was a kind of renunciation building. That's when Nehemiah, I told Mitt Malcolm MacDonald, who was the author of the White Paper, he was office, Canadian office was, and he taught him in Oxford, I tell you the story, he taught him in Oxford. And he said, Malcolm said to me in the afternoon, hello Lewis, how are you? I said, all right, how are you, Malcolm? Malcolm said, what are you doing, Lewis? I said, I am writing a book. What is it called? It is called The Two MacDonalds, A Study in Treachery. Let me tell you, he said he said it. Very rude, very arrogant, but I mean...
And very right.
Anyway, when that happened, I remember talking to a man called, this is really St. James's Palace Conference is called. I think it must have been late 39, this was happened. When the British were really afraid of, well, the Arabs, I mean, they did it to appease the Arabs for obvious reasons. War was coming, and they didn't want any trouble with the Arabs.
Uh-huh.
Perfectly intelligible,
yes,
what they did, but it ruined the Jews. And Michael Beale, who was often the chief and designer in the Foreign Office, he was a lecturer in Southampton, taken on by Toynbee, uh-huh, in the Institute of National Affairs, which had been converted into a kind of think tank for the Foreign Office. And I used to talk to him about it. And he was very emphasized, but he was quite a nice man, not at all anti-Semitic, and we used to talk about what would happen. And I did become very concerned. And in America, during the war, I was simply 100% Zionist. And nor did I conceal it. And everyone in the British Embassy knew I was. It didn't have to be. I saw after the war that the man who, the minister, who said I'd be a very suitable person to be employed by the British government, said he's an Oxford Don and non-Zionist Jew, very firmly. Well, that's a mistake. I wouldn't have been employed otherwise.
What happens when you...
I never saw any Jew. And in America during the war, I saw Felix Frankfurter, who was a Zionist. Mm-hmm. I saw Weizmann, he was there. Mm-hmm. And not many, no American Zionists much. Mm-hmm. No, I didn't really. I wasn't... I saw Ben...
Stephen Wise and all these characters.
No, may have met him once or twice. Right. But I met Ben-Gurion on an occasion.
What was your impression? A peasant?
Mm-hmm. Balkan. Not really able to read or write much.
Yeah.
Balkan leader, peasant leader, of a powerful kind.
That's what made him great in so many ways.
Red-faced peasant leader of an energetic kind, who knew what he represented, knew what was marching behind him,
yeah,
and jealous of and unfriendly to Weizmann. Because he was a sort of gentleman, he thought. He wasn't. And very comfortable. Point about Weizmann, he was never comfortable except among Yiddish-speaking Jews, roughly speaking, Eastern Europe.
Yeah.
All right with me because I came the right stock. I knew what they were like. I didn't speak Yiddish, but I was
how
all right.
How comfortable was he with Sabras? How comfortable was he with...
He loved them. He adored them in a romantic way.
Yeah.
He wanted to be buried in a colony called Nahalal because Dayan's father, he knew, came from there. He thought they were marvelous. He was proud of them, pleased with them, sentimental about them. That's why he felt happiest, in a kind of idealistic way. He wasn't cozy with them, but he liked being there.
Yes. But you didn't speak Yiddish with him, so you couldn't have been in your...
No.
You couldn't have been in his inner circle.
Not quite. But I knew the form of life. I knew what these people were. He could talk quite freely to me.
Yes.
In English, yes.
Yes.
But still. He cracked the famous joke. To be a Zionist, one need not be mad, but it helps. He also,
And when did you become active in Zionist questions?
Well,
again after the war?
No, not active for the war, except for the Friends of the Hebrew University. It was very marginal. I had nothing to do with them. I mean, I wasn't thought of as an active Zionist anyway. No. I became active. I never was active. I just was one.
Yeah.
I never paid dues to the Zionist Party.
Yeah.
I never went to congresses.
Mm-hmm.
I never went to meetings.
Did you take part in any meetings, discussions about British policy towards Palestine. Yes.
46, 47. No, I didn't. I used to go and see Weizmann in Dorchester after the war. And I used to meet, I suppose, thieves and people there, and part of the entourage. The only time I ever went to a meeting about that was in the Six-Day War. No, sorry, not at all. When Jerusalem was besieged in 48. And there was a meeting with something called the Anglo-Jewish Association, which is by nature full of respectable British Jews, not Zionists at all.
Yes.
But what would the events be with their... They were also very worried. Mm-hmm. And I went to a meeting with a lot of, respectable Jewish members of Parliament, mm-hmm. who were not Zionists, mm-hmm. and, journalists and people. My distant cousin, Mr. Feivel, who wrote a life of George Orwell, people like that. Yes. And I was a question of what to do. And I said I would write a letter to Amory, who was a colleague of mine to ourselves, 100% Zionist, always.
Yes.
And I would tell him, sir, come out to somebody, rescue these. Because the massacre of Jews in Jerusalem is really too much. Come, that's all. Well, no such thing happened. And the Jews won. But it didn't look like that. It's the only time I ever lifted him. I've written articles on the subject when instructed, but I never took part in... I've never took part in political action.
Can you remember any article particularly?
Yes. People always want to... Before the war, nothing. After the war, during the war, nothing. You may imagine. After the war, I wrote an article called Jewish Slavery and Emancipation. An article presented to a festschrift for the University of Jerusalem and printed in the Jewish Chronicle, which I dictated in 2 days, uncorrected. I never had it reprinted because I thought it caused too much fuss among the Jews. I've told you about it, surely.
No.
Oh, well, I think at our next meeting, I'm going to repeat it to you. It was translated into French, for some odd reason, and appeared in a volume of Jewish essays by me, mm-hmm. only in French. Well, I could see that. I showed it to Keith Joseph, who said, you can say that kind of thing, but you can't write it. Mm. I remember. No, I'll tell you. It was 20 years of the Hebrew University publication, Hebrew University, which I was vaguely... I'd been to see it in 1934. I went to Palestine, as I told you.
Mm.
I told
you.
Yes, you did. Well, all right. There's two theses. How much time are we? Six. You better go.
I think I should, and we should pick this up.
It's quite a good subject.
Jewish slavery and emancipation will be our subject next time.
It's an article which compares Jews to hunchbacks. Mm. I can tell you why. That's not in the article. Because Herbert Agar, you know what I mean,
yes.
once told about Otto Kahn, father of my great friend, Mrs. Ryan,
yes.
and my other friend, Miss Lady, what was she called, wife of British General, that Otto Kahn was once walking Fifth Avenue with a humpbacked inventor called Steinmetz.
Yeah.
Quite famous, but
yeah.
not a Jew.
Yeah.
Not a Jew. I don't know what he invented, but anyway. And they passed Temple Emmanuel. And Otto said, probably baptized by that time, said many years ago, in a pensive way, many years ago I belonged to this community. Steinmetz said, many years ago I was a hunchback. I was very pleased by it. Well, I still thought about Herbert Agar, who said that Otto Kahn paid his way into clubs and things. I mean, really was terrible, what he did. Really was dreadful. I agreed with him. There's nothing like the contempt which real wolves have for Jews who try and creep into the world. It may be anti-Semitism, but there's some justification for it. So long as Jews behave like long as Jews grovel, they're about to be kicked. My thesis about Jews is simple. If you, first you get kicked because you're a Jew, because of killing Christ. Then you fidget. Because you fidget, you're kicked. Because you're kicked, you fidget. Then they're way out. The vicious, the real vicious. Quite an interesting kind. How are you getting away from here?